This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Award-winning author, historian, cartographer Rick Britton joins me every week as we explore the top 25 most significant battles of the Civil War that were fought here in Virginia. Good afternoon, Rick. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. So let's see where we are on our list. Now, last week, we explored the Battle of the Wilderness, which took place just up the road here, between here and Fredericksburg, as you go up Route 20.
May 5th through 7th, 1864. And this is one of the few times on the list where we're talking about sequential battles. So
That took place right after another.
Right after the other. So the Wilderness was May 5th through 7th, and Spotsylvania Courthouse is the next big one right after it, May 9th. Through 18th, a lot of people refer to it as a campaign because it lasted for so long.
Wow.
Yeah, so the importance and the reason the Wilderness is on this list is because of its size, number one, but also number two, and this might actually outweigh the size of the battle, the amount of men involved, is the fact that it was the first time that Ulysses S. Grant and Robert E. Lee faced off here in the Eastern Theater. This one, Spotsylvania, is on the list because of its size, but also because of the ferocity of the fighting.
Remind us the big takeaway from the Wilderness, because we all sort of know this was the big Civil War battle that took place in the woods with very little clearings, very little openings, really bloody, just a bunch of guys in the trees. You didn't necessarily know who you were shooting at.
The big takeaway is that Robert E. Lee caught Ulysses Grant's Army of the Potomac in the Wilderness and chose to assault them there to start off the fight. Very confused, fighting back and forth. The woods caught fire. Horrific fighting. A lot of the wounded were burned, of course, in that forest fire. It was a draw, but Ulysses S. Grant, unlike McClellan, unlike Hooker, unlike Burnside, unlike McDowell, didn't retreat after a draw against Robert E. Lee.
So that was the first time you had a Union general who said, let's keep fighting, let's not withdraw and set up camp and
in the Eastern
lick our wounds, let's just keep going.
Right. If he had been Hooker, he would have gone back across the Rapidan and back across the Rappahannock.
Yeah.
Burnside did the same thing. Right. But Ulysses S. Grant was of a different timber. And like we've said so many times before, and I have a tremendous admiration for the guy. I'm a Virginian. And I'm proud of that, but this man was the general who had the guts, had the stomach
to bring this to an end,
to do what had to be done.
Yeah.
Right.
I had forgotten that the woods burned during the Battle of the Wilderness,
and a lot of the woods caught on
so
fire.
So you must have had hundreds or thousands of guys who were wounded just laying on the ground who burned to death.
Tens of thousands, yeah. Uh-huh.
Or I guess choked in the flames. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah.
Holy cow!
That
just
forest fire.
One section of the battlefield, right? Not the entire Wilderness.
It just burned itself out. I mean, you know, they didn't have airdrops then, with helicopters bringing in water and repellents or anything.
No. So yeah, it just burned itself out over time. Yeah.
So after the Battle of Wilderness,
so Grant decides to move the Army of the Potomac to the southeast, and some of the major roads facilitate that movement, the Plank Road, but also the Brock Road. And he knew that if he traveled to the southeast, he would eventually hit Spotsylvania Courthouse. And Spotsylvania Courthouse was a significant crossroads on the main road south from Fredericksburg to Richmond. So by kind of sidling to the southeast, moving the Army of the Potomac to the southeast, he could get astride the main road between Fredericksburg to Richmond and then take that route to Richmond south. So he starts making that move. Robert E. Lee gets wind of it. The Confederate cavalry actually beats him to Spotsylvania Courthouse. And the fighting starts with the cavalry. Then they get reinforced by some of the infantry. The entire Army of Northern Virginia under Robert E. Lee shows up in and around Spotsylvania Courthouse, and they dig in. And so from now pretty much to the end of the war, when the armies have any time, we're going to see them dig in. So overnight,
making trenches.
Overnight, they dug in and they created a problem. The line is about 6 miles long. These armies are pretty huge.
Gosh.
They dug in and they arranged their lines in the middle of the night. So if you imagine this long line, this long Confederate line, Spotsylvania Courthouse is just behind the right of the Confederate line. In the center, though, there's a ridge that juts out toward the enemy. And the engineers laying out the line in the middle of the night so the men could start digging in. Excuse me. They marked out where the best part, the best place to dig in would be. Unfortunately, they found out, you know, in daylight that what they had done is they created a mule shoe. The mule shoe juts out towards the federal line, and if
like
you
a
imagine
horseshoe.
Like a horseshoe, yeah. Upside down, like an upside down U. So what that created was this huge salient, and that because it has three sides on it, that makes it particularly vulnerable to attack. So the Spotsylvania Courthouse, the fighting on the Confederate left.
Where is this, by the way, Spotsylvania Courthouse?
It's
just out Route 3, west of Fredericksburg?
It's south of Fredericksburg, about 20 miles, in between Fredericksburg and Richmond.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's fighting on the Confederate left on the 9th, and as I mentioned before, the fighting and the campaign lasted between the 9th and the 18th of May, but the biggest fighting, the most horrific fighting, is on May 10th and May 12th. Now, with the Confederates dug in, and we're talking about in most places, the mule shoe salient, as I mentioned, is particularly vulnerable. But even there, the works are really well done. What the men would do is you would start off with a position, and hopefully you'd be on the military crest, so you've got an open field of fire in front of you, maybe 200 yards, 300 yards of open field looking downhill. They would start off by digging a trench, and as they dug down, they'd throw the dirt in front of them. Then they could reinforce that embankment in front of them, and a lot of the places, a lot of the earthworks at Spotsylvania were done this way, are reinforced with logs, with timber. So imagine a timber wall in front of you that might be as much as 4 feet high. The ditch is another foot or foot and a half, so when you're standing in it, you're almost entirely behind this wall of timber,
yeah.
And then earth in front of it. Then on top of it, in a lot of places, on top of this, they put what was a head log. And the head log left just enough space in between it and the top of the embankment for the men to fire through. So that meant that covered their head. The only thing that would protrude would be the muzzles of the weapons of the defenders.
Did they carry, from inside of it. Rick, we're talking with Rick Ritten. Did they carry shovels, or were there just some soldiers who had shovels?
Some of the soldiers had shovels in their train, in the wagon trains accompanying the regiments and the brigades. There'd be shovels, there'd be buckets. Not a whole lot of these things. A lot of the stuff was dug in by hand and with bayonets and anything that they could use. But there were some shovels, there were some pickaxes and things like that, but it's not as if every soldier had a shovel and a pickaxe. So a lot of this stuff was just done by hand. Then, of course, in front of them, they'd cut down trees and lay them out facing the enemy. So these Confederate positions were really, really well dug in, where one defender in some places is worth as many as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 attackers. Very, very good earthworks, good fortifications.
And again, this is an effort on the part of the Confederates to dig in and stop the Union advance south towards Richmond.
That's right. And in this particular instance, to stop them from taking Spotsylvania Courthouse, a significant crossroads. So one way to break this was discovered. It actually worked on May 10th. And that's this large fight that took place on May 10th. Union Brigadier General by the name of Emory Upton came up with the idea. It had been done before. It's not like it was brand new, but he said, let me try this. And that's an attack in depth. When you think of a regiment in a line of battle, it's only two ranks deep. And that formation was adopted so that the men could advance in a line two ranks deep and deliver their fire to the enemy. Most of the battles are fought that way. An attack in depth, what he used was a column of regiments. So, he had about four or five brigades in his regiment. Then another four were attached to him, so he had a small division at that point. And they are stacked regiments deep, one regiment after another. This is the Union side. So in Emory Upton's attack, the men were perhaps as many as 20 deep in this attack. And the idea is a regiment in a line of battle can attack a fortification and a firefight will ensue, but they don't have any strength at any one place to overrun that fortification, where the defenders, as I mentioned just a moment earlier, the defenders are worth many numbers of attackers. So the idea is in one small location to put enough men in the attacking column
to overwhelm those
to just rush at the enemy. And yeah. Upton attacked in a column of regiments, and they ordered the men to go in with fixed bayonets. And they ordered them not to load their weapons. So
holy
what that
cow.
Meant to
so
the
attackers, run across this field.
They have to come, and they're not going
right
to want to stop.
Yeah.
They're going to want to keep coming because their whole object is to get at the enemy, get over inside the works, and then open up a hole that another force can come through and just can just punch through and just cause the retreat of the men at that area. And it actually worked. Upton got in there, punched a hole. What happened is the units in the front of this column of regiments, one unit on the right will swerve to the right and protect the flank that way, and another unit on the left will swerve to the left. The units behind will punch right on through, and they actually caused a lodgment. They actually took a portion of this Mule Shoe salient on its western face, and they held on for a little while. Sadly, reinforcements that were supposed to come to them to help punch this hole through didn't come. So now they're there, and they're stuck there, and the Confederates, of course, counterattacked and threw them back. But it worked, and they captured about 1,000 Confederate defenders from this one section. Now, the attack succeeded in the sense that it took part of the salient. It failed in that it wasn't big enough. So Meade and Grant think, well, that worked with a number of men. Let's try it with an entire corps. And let's attack the northern face of the Mule Shoe, where it was really vulnerable. And that's what they did on the morning of May 12th. They used an entire corps, the 2nd Corps under General Hancock, about 10,000 men.
Holy cow.
And they came at them just as the sun was coming up. And
I can't even imagine what 10,000 guys with fixed bayonets running through the woods and across fields would look like.
In a column of regiments, in a dense formation like that.
I mean, how many miles does that stretch?
Just a huge formation. Yeah, just a huge, huge formation. Ironically, there was a battalion of artillery at the head of the Confederate artillery at the head of the Mule Shoe salient. And Robert E. Lee had the idea that Grant was shifting again to Grant's left, to Robert E. Lee's right. So he pulled that artillery out. At the very last minute, they realized they'd made a mistake, the Confederates, and they ordered the artillery back. It got there just in time to be captured. Hancock's men came over the face of the Mule Shoe salient at the angle, took about 5,000 prisoners and captured these 20 guns that I'm talking about. Hardly any of these guns even got off a round. If they had been there, it would have been a little bit different. We don't know, though, if they would have been able to hold out, but it would have been different. And
so did the Federals then, the Union troops then took Spotsylvania Courthouse?
So they took the salient, and then the fighting continued in a downpour for the rest of May 12th. The Confederates tried to counterattack and recapture this salient, and for hours and hours, it's one of the most vicious combats in the Civil War. For hours and hours, opposing forces were a mere paces apart on opposite sides of the same earthwork. People would rise up briefly and fire at the enemy, and men would hand them up weapons, and they'd keep firing until somebody shot them down. For hours, the opposing colors were just a mere paces apart. In one instance, the Federals brought up two pieces of artillery, just within yards of the Confederates, and started opening up with canister, making those guns huge sawed-off shotguns. Within just a few moments, all 20 men attached to those two pieces of artillery, all the horses, all 20 men were just down, were either killed or wounded. Beneath each cannon hangs a sponge bucket, because in between rounds, they would use a sponge on the end of a rammer to wash out the powder. The sponge bucket, after the battle, had 40 mini-ball holes through it. It had been formed out of sheet iron. It was 1-inch thick sheet iron. It had 40 mini-ball holes through it. At this fighting at the angle, at the bloody angle at Spotsylvania, a 22-inch in diameter oak tree was cut down just from the volleys of the infantry fire.
Holy cow. You mean just the
The mini balls kept chipping away at the tree.
The gunfire brought down a tree.
A 22-inch diameter tree, and it fell into the Confederate line.
So what was the end result?
The end result was that the Confederates retired. They dug another earthwork across the base of the mule shoe and then said, basically, you can have that salient, and they were able to hold on. And then at the very end of Spotsylvania, Grant continues again to his left, and there are more battles on the way to Richmond and Petersburg.
There you go. Rick Britton, local author, historian, cartographer, and he's teaching classes at the Senior Center. What's the details on that?
Well, this coming Wednesday, September 22nd, a local historian is going to come and talk about the fighting at the Mule Shoe Salient at Spotsylvania. And then 2 weeks from today, on September 29th, I'm going to lead a tour of the Mule Shoe Salient.
Very cool. You'll take people right to this spot at the where this battle was fought at Spotsylvania Courthouse.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Folks get the details?
Call 974-6538.
There you go. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.